Welcome to the Just Raise podcast. I'm your host, Joe Sweeney. And today on the show, we're diving into NFTs. I bought into the NFT craze a few weeks back and proceeded to watch the price absolutely collapse before they came roaring back. But one of the things I found during that downswing is that they're surprisingly hard to sell. It's not like the stock market where you place an order and it's filled in seconds. To sell an NFT, you have to find someone who wants to buy that NFT, like selling art or a house. BridgeSplit solves that problem. Our guests today are Mary Gunnarante and Luke Truitt, co-founders of BridgeSplit. They're creating liquidity in NFT markets by fractionalizing NFTs, creating index funds so institutional investors can get involved, and building complex financial markets on top of NFTs. And because it's DeFi, decentralized finance, it's completely automated and decentralized, meaning they don't require a bank or any third party to process transactions. And before we dive in, if you like the show, check out our newly launched Just Raise newsletter. Written by my friend Alan Skoloff with cameos from myself, we dive deeper into tech news and everything you hear on the podcast. You can sign up with the link in the show notes. All right. Well, it's great to meet the both of you. I think what you're doing at BridgeSplit is fascinating. Fractionalization, lending. To start us off, what does BridgeSplit do and why did you guys start it?
Well, I guess there's a little background on us. Maybe it'll make it a little more clear why we're building this. Mary and I kind of have very similar backgrounds. We went to school together. We started what became a defense contracting staffing business that we sold in the middle of DeFi summer back in 2020. And then we really got excited about like how crypto could branch out from kind of like the close circle of people that are using it and still kind of that way. And originally for us, it was really about how do we bring, you know, more individual users into the space. And that was like building, we built a mobile wallet. We built a couple of like really simple, easy onboarding experiences for people. But it was pretty clear to us that like finance by itself wasn't a huge motivator to get people excited about crypto. There's a lot more of a cultural and a little bit of a narrative building that you have to do to get people kind of over that hump. And NFTs to us felt like kind of the most exciting way to do that. A lot of people were getting into it for whether or not you think it's a good reason, but the speculative money-making aspect, as well as the pure cultural, these things are fun to look at, fun to think about. But kind of more importantly on the NFT side was about this technology, right? Digital uniqueness, tokenizing any asset and being able to transact that value on a blockchain, right? Which has kind of all these other components in decentralized finance that make it really exciting to use. And so we really just got deep on NFT technology. We got deep on Solana as like more on the developer ecosystem from a, you know, a cost and a speed perspective, scalability. And that kind of got us really excited about what we could do with NFTs if a lot of these new developments were to go forward, and realize that that value that's locked up in NFTs is something that is very difficult to kind of extract, right? A lot of what you see with NFTs today is just buying and selling on marketplaces. And there's not a lot more that you can do to kind of utilize the financial value that's locked up in them. And that's what led us to BridgeSplit, which we're calling effectively an NFT liquidity platform, liquidity stack. We're focused on different ways of allowing NFTs to be financialized, sold, priced, and ultimately used in decentralized finance.
It sounds like you started with wallets and on the DeFi side, and then saw the just cultural explosion of NFTs and decided to move over to where all the attention is.
Yeah, for better or worse, I don't know. We were like loving NFTs back in Top Shot days, but it's grown on us. I don't know if you want to speak to it a little bit more, but.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting combination building in the NFT space where you have both this cultural moment around like what NFTs are today, and it is like the most exciting part about crypto for a lot of people, but longer term, the greenfield opportunity that exists in NFTs and how much of the value today and in traditional financial markets are at the end of the day uniquely priced assets. And as like an ecosystem, we still really don't have any of those assets that have come on chain. Like we don't really have real estate on chain. We don't have land on chain. We don't have like debt on chain. And so it's really exciting to us to not only be building in this cultural moment, there's this like very clear need and pain point, but like 5-10 years down the line, there's a lot of opportunity to kind of build real world asset bridging, being able to financialize those assets as well. And so it's that exciting combo to us that really attracted us to the space and felt like it was the next frontier in DeFi.
It's a wild technology. And just what's happened over the last year is insane. I have a friend who bought into Bored Apes a year ago for like 2 ETH or something. Now it's worth, I think the floor is 70 ETH, so 250K. And he can't get out of it. Like, he has no way. He can either sell it, in which case he loses all the upside. He can't lend against it. Like, there's no, and he's like 20 something. This is by far his largest holding by like 5X. I just jumped into a project for like 2 ETH, and I've been watching the floor go up and down, and I have no way to hedge against any of that. And I'm in a single project. So there's so many interesting things here. You guys are opening up potentially like collections and actually being able to get exposure to more than one. Like, I can't get into Bored Apes right now. I have 20K and I have like one single NFT in a single project that may or may not work. So I guess let's start with like at the top, how are you guys creating liquidity in this field? How does the fractionalization work?
Yeah, so the product is really, so I can kind of go into detail, but basically the North Star for us in building something like this is the idea of a liquidation engine for NFTs. And basically that's the idea of being able to recognize the value of a unique asset in any given point in time. And it seems pretty niche, but it's essentially what makes that value composable with the rest of the DeFi ecosystem and the rest of the crypto ecosystem. And the goal and like kind of the core of creating that liquidation engine is actually aggregating liquidity in various different ways and through like the grouping of assets and the aggregation of assets in what we're effectively calling index funds. And so the way you kind of create liquidity for an illiquid asset is by aggregating liquidity across a bunch of different illiquid assets. And so that's kind of the main vehicle for liquidity and yield, is you're either a liquidity provider to these index funds or you're buying and selling part of these index funds. And to your point of like only having exposure to one NFT collection because you only have like $20,000 to spend, kind of the ideal scenario. And even from like an institutional trading perspective, is that $20,000 can get you like diversified exposure into the asset class. And so that's what we're really focused on, is this idea of like, we started with single asset fractionalization, but really kind of you get to your sweet spot when you're doing like multi-asset fractionalization and index funds and using that aggregated yield for this NFT financialization stack.
So has anyone else built collections like this? I know Flamingo DAO has something kind of similar, but there's a finite number of seats. And to buy into the DAO, it's now, I think, cost millions of dollars. Is there anyone else building like this kind of thing for the mass market, or does it exist yet?
On the single asset fractionalization side, there is one protocol that's really done well with it called fractional.art. They're Ethereum based. They've had a couple of really big NFTs that have been fractionalized on there. If you're familiar with Pleaser DAO, they've got a good relationship there, and they fractionalized the Doge, which was like at one point $300 million NFT. I think it mostly fluff value, but obvious problems with doing this on Ethereum is that if you're already not able to afford a $25,000 NFT, you're probably not able to afford $200 gas to buy a $500 fraction of an NFT, right? It just doesn't make any sense. So building something like this on Solana obviously has a very large inherent advantage in that you could buy $50 worth of a Bored Ape and it would financially make sense. But longer term, the way that we're thinking about the product is most of the value from what we're building comes from like the actual financial primitives that are being developed here, right? The ability to fractionalize something and plug those fractions in your ecosystem to build a bucket of assets, and then plug that bucket of assets into your DeFi ecosystem. And then the same thing with collateralized lending and liquidations and all that stuff. And so we see a lot more of the unique value of what we're building coming on the developer side for other protocols to be able to plug into BridgeSplit and utilize BridgeSplit as sort of like that base liquidity layer, similar to how a lot of AMMs and those types of products have become base liquidity layers for broader decentralized finance. And I think obviously the BridgeSplit app will be great because, you know, people can come use it. It'll be very familiar, very Web2 experienced, but longer term, probably 90 to 95% of the true value is going to come from other people being able to plug into it and leverage it.
When you think about fractionalization, what you really mean here is I take one NFT, I break it up into 100 different NFTs that are all part of that single NFT. And then that increases liquidity across the project because now more people can buy in for a fraction of the price, like splitting stock, like Tesla recently split and cut in half.
the big difference from what you said versus how it works with BridgeSplit, for example, is basically it doesn't get fractionalized into more NFTs. So it gets fractionalized into a new fungible token. So the same way like Ethereum is a token or Solana is a token or whatever, right? There's a specific mint address, which is just like the ID of that token. And then there's some supply, total supply of that token that will. And when you fractionalize something, what we're doing is we're locking that NFT up into a vault. And then that vault is owned by the BridgeSplit program. So we don't own it, nobody, it's just all smart contract based. And then we create a new token from scratch that has a total supply determined by the person who fractionalized it. And that is a Solana based token that you can set up an exchange for, you can set up an order book for, you can send it to your friends, like whatever you want to do with it, you can do it. It's actually very powerful tool for like even engagement. Like one of the things that we're able to do with this fractionalization stuff is like we took very cheap NFT. It was maybe $1,000 NFT, something like that, right? Which is cheap, I don't know, depending on who you're talking to, right? Compared to a Bored Ape, right? Cheap. And we fractionalized it. And we've just basically been using it as an engagement tool within our Discord as just like, hey guys, like, you know, we were going to play this game and we're going to like give out this airdrop, this fraction, right? And it's not like we're giving out our token. We're not giving out any, you know, very expensive token, but it's still very cool to have because it'll show up in their wallet with the NFT symbol. They'll be able to trade it, whatever they want to do. And it's not like from a dollar amount, extremely expensive, but it is fun, right? It's new and it's a good thing to use in that way. But obviously the better use case for it is taking super expensive assets, fractionalizing them, and then being able to buy and sell that token. If you go to app.bridgesplit.com, you can kind of see a couple of examples of this. So we fractionalized the mascot for the MonkDAO, which is kind of the biggest, most prominent NFT collection on Solana. It's kind of like the CryptoPunks equivalent. It's a little bit older, a little bit lo-fi, not quite like Bored Ape quality art, but it's really, we've got an automatic market maker there, and then people can just kind of hang out, trade it, whatever they want to do. We actually got one of them listed on CoinGecko, which is kind of fun. And we're going to try to set up an automated way of doing that with them so that people can like track the real-time price, same way they track the price of, you know, any other token.
So you're actually minting coins, like a meme token for this NFT. So when I go use BridgeSplit, my artifact CloneX number 1000 and whatever goes into the vault, and then I get all of the tokens and then I can sell the token. So I'm now like not the owner of that NFT anymore, but I'm the owner of all of the tokens that make up that NFT.
Exactly. And you own 100% of those tokens. You can just straight up swap that NFT back out. But if you don't, the NFT can be sold, and the voting on whether or not it should be sold and the price that it should be sold is based on a majority of those tokens. So if you own 80% of the tokens, you control the price and whether or not it should get sold. And then if the NFT is sold, the proceeds from that get distributed equally among the fraction holders. So that's kind of like the relationship between the minted tokens and the NFT locked in the vault.
Yeah, that's wild. It's the tokenization of everything. It's like minting your own social token, but for your NFT.
Yeah, something that the MonkDAO, which is like the top NFT collection on Solana right now, was they actually fractionalized their mascot and distributed it to holders. And so it kind of functioned more like a meme coin in the sense that you're talking about, where it was like kind of a symbol of this DAO and part of this like greater community.
It shows up in their wallet with the, you know, like the actual NFT as the coin, right? So you like feel like you're kind of still own the NFT a little bit, but it's not the NFT, right? It's like this coin representation is fun.
Yeah, I can imagine DAOs doing that, where like it plays into the whole cultural piece of crypto right now, where you have all these anonymous accounts run by profile picture NFTs, and you could then like tokenize that NFT and give it out to everybody who's like a part of the DAO or their collection and things like that. So then the next thing here that's super interesting that you're doing is lending. And the big question here is like, how on earth do you actually value these things? I know you're looking at like floor fractionalization. Here's the floor of project and I can get a fraction of that, but the floors fluctuate pretty rapidly and they didn't really exist a year ago. So how do you deal with the lending piece?
Yeah. So the way we're thinking about the Oracle, and like, that's essentially what we're talking about here, is like, how do you price and how do you have like an accurate Oracle when you're doing these lendings? How do you decide how much collateral something is worth? And so for like full disclosure, the entire system works with like a functional floor pricing oracle. And so that's like your first challenge, is like, how do you get an accurate floor price? And so we're working on aggregating across marketplaces, and people are over collateralized to a certain extent. And so when you're below some maintenance ratio is when you do get liquidated. And kind of the interesting thing we're doing that I touched upon earlier is we're not actually selling into an open marketplace when we do this. And so with NFT lending, you have that model where you're kind of like a compound, for example, and when someone gets liquidated, you're trying to sell that NFT on the open market. And obviously, for the reasons you mentioned, things fluctuate so much, you can't necessarily guarantee a value for it. And so what we're doing instead to address liquidations is actually selling it back into these index funds that I mentioned that we're aggregating liquidity across. And so then it becomes, how do you price things in and out of the Oracle? And so that's where the floor price Oracle comes in. And then we're working with a couple of different players across both the Solana and Ethereum ecosystems that are doing things like ML-based pricing, peer prediction pricing. And it's about like aggregating all of those different models to kind of slowly become a more capital efficient system. So if you do have a super high value NFT, you're not getting like floor level loans for it.
That Oracle, what are the parameters that go into that as far as actually pricing a floor?
There's kind of like three big buckets of data that we're able to use for that. So the biggest and most obvious one is looking at on-chain bid-ask data for these NFTs. So you're sitting in on Solana, you've got kind of like four or five like reasonably active marketplaces, and you can look at what bids people are placing on NFTs on these marketplaces. And then obviously you can look at the ask price, the sale price, and aggregating that across these on-chain real time gives you some indication of how individual NFTs are going to perform. On Ethereum, it's very similar, but it's a little harder, a little more expensive to do it on Ethereum. So we're very much focused on doing this on Solana first. So that's big thing one. Thing two is what Mary referenced, which is like ML-based pricing. So looking at historically, how have assets traded relative to their floor based on things like traits, you know, rarities, all that kind of stuff, and saying, okay, if we can get some rough gauge for here's where the floor is, given that this is in the top 10%, historically it's traded around this much above the floor prices where the exchanges have happened. So we can get a little bit closer to the true value. Then the next bucket of this is what Mary referred to as peer-to-peer pricing or peer-to-peer appraisals. There's companies called Upshot, Abacus, and a few others that are working on allowing people to kind of bid against each other, not to buy the asset, but to help price it. And then those who do a good job of pricing something get rewarded. Those who do a bad job are penalized. And it's kind of like this like game theory way of appraising assets that are a little bit harder, more unique.
Prediction markets.
Very much like a prediction market, yeah. And then the last piece of this for us is what's called derivative implied pricing. So if you're familiar with the idea of like a future or an option, there's these very much capital efficient financial products that don't require you to put up all the capital to purchase something, right? You just usually put up kind of some margin to be able to purchase it, that are much faster and more accurate short-term pricing metrics. So we're building like perpetual futures markets on top of these index funds that help kind of reinforce the pricing that people can trade $10 to give us a sense of whether or not they're really willing to pay $100,000 for this thing, right? If they're buying into a futures contract at, say, they're pricing it at $100,000 and they're buying it, even if they don't have to put up $100,000 for it, they're still making the bet that it's going to go up, right? And so we could get into financial details of all of it, but really derivative implied pricing longer term is a really good way of getting like kind of that last 5% or really granular level of pricing data.
Yeah, the amazing part about this automated is that it's all done without any human interaction. You're a protocol. So, you know, you'll have the Oracle, you'll have the fractionalization protocol, but there's no actual input from your team. It'll be an entirely automated, it's like a true DeFi protocol.
Yeah, no, it's like all automated. Like all of this is like via pricing Oracle. And like you mentioned, like an ML-based pricing on chain peer appraisal mechanism on chain, like floor data. And so at the end of the day, there's just like inputs. And over time, like those inputs will drive better outputs for how much we're able to give out as loans and kind of maintaining solvency of the overall lending market.
Are you guys both collectors now?
Yeah, slowly and steadily. Like I think Luke mentioned this, but I think everyone goes through this phase as they're like onboarding into Web3. So I would say a year ago, we weren't super tuned into the NFT ecosystem and we didn't kind of understand why it was important. And I think we had reduced it to like a very naive view of it. But over time, we've started collecting more and more. A project that like we've been really excited about in the Solana ecosystem is the Genesis Go project. And they've been doing NFTs that represent token ownership in their protocol, which represents kind of a brand new financial primitive and financial utility for NFTs, which is really a direction we see the space moving into more and more this year. So yeah, we've become big collectors ourselves.
Also the dragons. We like the dragons.
Yeah, I like the clones on Ethereum. Do you think that this will actually create more liquid markets for buying and selling NFTs? Because one of the interesting things about these markets, and it's kind of inherent in your whole business model, is that they're incredibly illiquid. So if you buy an NFT, that Bored Ape might be worth, I don't know, $500,000, but you only get to sell it when someone wants to buy that Bored Ape for $500,000, which may not happen tomorrow or next month or the month after that. It's not like the stock market where you come in, you want to make a trade, that trade happens because it's so liquid. It's like a house or a piece of art. They're not easy to just flip overnight. Do you think this makes it easier to actually flip and buy and sell NFTs?
Yeah. So I think this like creates a ton more liquidity, both from like two sides. So one, not only is there more liquidity in that you can now instantly sell into an index fund, and things that took like day long sales is like, you can now again do instantly and you can get liquidity for that capital. But I think longer term, what's exciting to us about this is we're going to see a huge inflow of capital into the NFT ecosystem as this problem gets solved. Right now, it doesn't make a lot of sense, like we mentioned earlier, for institutions to get into kind of this space and this asset class because it's so illiquid, because they can't take flexible and complex positions. But as they're able to do that, and it is like investing in any other asset, we're going to see a lot more capital in the space. And it's really institutional capital that makes it kind of such a positive experience for retail traders because those volumes are there. So yeah, both like twofold, from like directly now you have way more liquidity because you're not just trying to sell on like a one-to-one basis on an open marketplace, but also because of the inflow of capital that will come from solving this problem.
Yeah, so this is the transition between being an art collector trying to sell to another art collector to being an asset holder who can now sell to both index funds and retail investors on like a giant open market.
Yeah, I think it marks the kind of development and the evolution of an asset class from going to like, okay, here's this thing we can like buy and sell, and it's like you're bartering like in some olden days, versus like here's this like complex financial ecosystem where you can take like a leveraged position on something, a diversified position with $20. You're no longer with like this market of retail traders, but there's institutional traders providing liquidity, there's yield opportunity. And so I think this will be kind of the thing that unlocks, like, again, this next wave of NFTs and NFTs as an asset class.
You're like the Uniswap of NFTs.
I would take that.
So the other huge question is, how do you guys actually make money? There's a lot of obviously potential answers here. Do you take like 1% of all the coins created when I tokenize my NFT?
Yeah, so we haven't started monetizing quite yet, and we're going to turn those on quickly here. We're just trying to figure out kind of where everything was with the product, but there's a couple different opportunities for us. One is upon like single asset fractionalization, upon the creation of an index fund, something that's more assets under management for the index funds, and then trading fees on all these different vaults, just between different traders. And then with the lending market, you have both the kind of spread between the lend and borrow rates, as well as liquidation fees for people, as hopefully their NFTs don't get liquidated, but if they do.
That's fascinating. And then the liquidation, can you talk about that as how that works, liquidation of NFTs?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, basically the index funds serve as, right, we talked about this, kind of like a really large capital base that's backed up by NFTs. So the pricing in and out of an index fund is determined by that more complex oracle that we discussed. So when I deposit an asset into the index fund, I get some amount of index tokens based on the price determined by that oracle. Same thing when I want to swap out an NFT. If I want to buy an NFT out of the index fund, also a price determined by that oracle. So when we want to determine, hey, I have this NFT, I want to take a loan out against it, we price it using the price that it would fetch if we sold it into the index fund. So that's how we're determining, okay, you can take out 50% of that as a loan. If the price determined by the price of the index fund drops below that, you know, amount that you've taken out or closed, then we sell it into the index fund. We get back index tokens, and we sell index tokens on the open market to then pay back the loan, if that makes sense. So we can guarantee the price and we can guarantee a sale. And then for larger index funds, the liquidity on that central exchange for trading the index token is going to be deep enough that we could take a lot of liquidations out on that, a lot of sells, and still end up being able to pay off the assets there. And it's a really good opportunity for, like, you know, any individual, like NFT, somebody wants to snipe NFTs. If something is liquidated into there, you just need to go buy some index tokens on the open market and go swap out your index tokens for that NFT that just got deposited. So then there's your upward pressure on the index price, if that makes sense.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So you actually have, and it also kind of creates upward pressure on those NFTs as well. Like, they kind of can't fall below a certain floor if people buy into the index and then buy into this NFT project that's crashing. Right. We've talked a bunch about how you actually price these NFTs as far as lending goes and things like that. Do you have any ideas on the staying power of NFTs? So, like, what makes something like a meme that goes viral? What makes a project blow up and what makes a project just not? Like, what do you think? Do you guys, having lived in the space for a while now, what do you think makes a great project?
Yeah, I feel like this is like the cliche answer that a lot of people would give you, but I feel like community drives a lot of value for the NFTs that, like, I've seen. Either, like, you either need community or utility, and utility can come in the form of both, like, gaming utility as well as, like, financial utility, similar to the NFTs I was describing earlier. But from, like, MonkDAO, the collection I mentioned on Solana, the reason that we both joined, and I think a lot of people join, is it turns out it's, like, a really just, like, awesome crew of people, and it's just like this group of internet friends that are fun to be around, and it's a hefty price to pay, but I think a lot of people find, like, the community worth it, and that kind of energy and being able to replicate some of that energy online, I think, has driven a ton of value for, like, the MonkDAO, for example. And then you have, like, your branches of utility that make it, like, kind of a more sustainable value. I think the projects you see, like, immediately go to zero. It's just like, here's this artwork, goodbye everyone. And the price kind of reflects that. But yeah, I don't know if you have any other thoughts.
No, I mean, I think from a longer term perspective, like, probably a lot of these things are going to go to zero or close to zero. I would guess 95 to 99% of NFTs are going to be worthless in a year or 2 years, just because, like we all know, there's not a ton of inherent value to them, but the community is the one, like, staying power there. But longer term, all the stuff we're excited about are things that inherently you can do stuff with. Either you can earn money on and they're, like, a productive asset, or they give you access to something. So we've been talking to a ton of gaming projects where, I don't know if you played Clash of Clans when you were younger, but, like, I loved Clash of Clans.
I was also.
And the idea of, like, you know, your town hall and all your, like, you spend a bunch of time building this awesome base, whatever, and all of those things can be bought and sold, like, just like anything else, is kind of crazy. And in the sense that, like, I enjoy playing the game, and now I can monetize that in some way. We saw with Axie Infinity and a couple other things. But as that space continues to evolve, I think, like, those, for example, are assets that will have staying power without a community specifically behind them, because the game itself is going to provide so much of a reason to continue buying into that, right? I'm always going to want to, if I don't have to spend 5 weeks building up the experience level to get X character, and I can just buy that character for $5,000, some people who really want to play the game and have a good bit of money sitting around are totally going to just do that, right? And that'll always exist. So I think, like, for us in the next 6 months to a year is going to be really, like, after 6 months and up to a year, is really going to be focusing on where those verticals are going to come in that aren't so much only community driven and are more utility driven, whether it's financial utility or practical in-world utility in the metaverse, whatever it may be.
Yeah, so I am hooked on this idea. I just talked to the founders of Coreloop. They're game developers backed by Andreessen Horowitz, and they're building a giant open MMORPG, like World of Warcraft, but all of the items, or most of the items, are going to be NFTs. And all of that is just wild.
I know, and I think you've seen it, like, some of the more Web2 gaming companies like Roblox and all these guys that I think want to move into it, but I don't know if any really found them much success, because I think, like, the problem kind of is that like the initial sale of the NFT or like the game profiting off the NFT isn't really the point. And like that probably shouldn't be the way for the game to monetize necessarily, like at least not in the moment. And it should be more about like empowering the people who are like power users of the platform to earn by, you know, being power users and continuing to do that. And maybe it's like some in-game transaction fee or something that the game makes off of it. But I think like the Web3 native or like built for NFT gaming platforms are going to have a big advantage in that regard, right? Because they know how to build NFTs out from the ground up, and they're not just like throwing it on top of something that people are already used to using.
I was going to say, I don't think it ends up looking like too different to the player than like a Web2 game. And I think even like 5-10 years ago, there are these like huge, robust, like in-game economies. And now I think it's about like replacing that back end with something that creates sustainable value for the users. And it just makes a lot more sense because now you're in a composable ecosystem. So for example, like the game you're talking about, because they have this composable back end, they could really quickly integrate index funds or in-game asset lending. And you kind of like 10x your developer team as a function of working with a blockchain versus like a centralized database where money is just like these fake points.
That gets into this huge question of utility. So I hear people in the NFT space talking about this all the time, that you buy this project and then in the future you'll get utility. And what they really mean is like future revenue streams off this digital asset. And it's kind of like you buy a building and then you can rent out like pieces of it. I don't know how you do that in an NFT. I guess if it's in a video game, you can like rent out access to different places. But like, what do you guys think are the most interesting potential utilities for NFTs?
The longer term really exciting stuff is just building custom representations of assets as NFTs. Really all an NFT is, right? It's kind of tainted with this idea of like it has to be a picture or like it has to be like something very virtual. But an NFT is just a blockchain representation of anything, right? Anything unique. And that could be like financial contracts, legal contracts. It could be like a lot of off-chain digital assets. Like we've seen a little bit of music, content and stuff like that. It's like people are playing with ideas, like a, you know, $1 billion use case for it yet. But all of those types of things are going to become more and more apparent as to how they're going to work as things like the developer experience improves, so that, you know, any developer can sit there and be like, oh, wow, what if I built a platform that helped people tokenize X? And so one of the really cool things that we're excited to work on, and there's people who are working on versions of this, but is the idea of like token vesting contracts being represented as NFTs. And that's the Genesis Go type thing where you've got some amount of tokens locked up for some amount of time that's customizable to each individual person, and the vesting schedules change, the total amount of tokens change, but it's transferable in the form of, you know, a token NFT, right? And that's something that would unlock a ton of liquidity for everybody, right? Like the tokens that, you know, we're giving to our employees would then, even though they're not going to fully vest for 4 years, would be able to be traded today because, you know, they could go put it out on the market and borrow against it, or they could go, you know, sell it into an index fund or sell it directly to somebody else, right? It for some early cash out if they wanted to do that, which we can argue about the incentives that like, you know, messes with, but regardless, it's a cool idea, right? Especially for investors and all these things. So I don't know. It's like very white space what you can do with it. And we're thinking about a lot of cool things we can do, but I'm most excited because it's like anybody can like start figuring this stuff out, right? And we're just trying to build that layer zero that once you have that idea of what the NFT will be, here's where you go to figure out how to get value out of it, if that makes sense.
You're building a complex financial market on what's currently like an art market.
And the bet is that art market will evolve into much more, and we'll have like basically stress tested the system on like a relatively low stakes market as things like token vesting contracts or like real financial products start to move on chain.
I've never really thought about NFTs as tokenized. So it kind of opens up this whole nother layer on top of the question of like, what could NFTs be used for? Gated memberships, things like that. Jordy at Party Round, who introduced us, he's using them as like a social currency of like, here's when this person actually invested in this startup and things like that. Yeah, super interesting. Do you think there are any like specific real world use cases, like physical assets that will be moved into NFTs for some reason?
Yeah, I mean, the way we like deem ownership of physical assets today at the end of the day is like a contract and a piece of paper. It's not like your name is like plastered on the front of the physical asset. And so it really easily maps to something like an NFT. And I think a big thing we'll see in the space and that Bridgelet wants to be a part of is that development of new NFT metadata standards that start to look more like legal contracts than more proof of ownership. Because at the end of the day, there's no reason why we have to transact physical assets through these long, like unwieldy, like physical paper processes that are like very bureaucratic. And being able to represent all of that value on chain eventually just creates a lot of convenience. It creates a lot of efficiency. You can take out a loan permissionlessly against your house, for example, if your house was represented as an NFT. And those are obviously like longer term goals, but I think there's like, we have a friend who's working on a company where they're putting jewelry on chain, for example, and working with like high-end jewelers. And if you have like some ring or piece of jewelry that's worth several $100,000, being able to permissionlessly get a loan against that, I think is something that's really interesting and might be kind of the first seeds we start to see with physical assets coming on chain. But it's definitely something we're super excited about and really see our infrastructure playing into in the future. Because like at the end of the day, we can't have a mortgage on chain until we can have like a mortgage-backed security on chain. And this is kind of the exact same infrastructure you would use to do something like that, is you're putting them all into an index, issuing shares of the index and creating more liquidity for an illiquid asset. And so, yeah, we see there's really no end to like what you can put on chain, and like to be able to digitally transact all value is like a huge kind of value unlock in general for the financial system and the decentralized financial system.
It almost increases visibility because right now all of those things kind of exist, but they're all like paper processes somewhere. To get a loan from a bank, they have to do a lot of digging to figure out how much this thing is actually worth and value it themselves. Whereas if everything was on chain, it's all transparent. It kind of reminds me of a friend of mine said, the reason we have to pay taxes the way we do, where we go and like file for them afterwards, is because the government really has no idea what we owe. But if they wanted to on blockchain, they could know exactly what you owe because everything is trackable via the blocks, like what was done where. It's all on chain, like you said. It makes you appreciate the whole truth on chain. Having truth on chain is a pretty cool idea.
Yeah. And it's also like going back to like the original reason we got excited about crypto in the first place, for the things that we were working on, you know, a couple of years ago with all this, which was like, how do we get more people and more real value integrated with like the crypto economy? And to us now, we're like really seeing how crypto as an asset class is maybe 2 trillion today, it was 3 trillion at one point a couple of weeks ago, whatever. But the like long-term, I mean, there could be hundreds of trillions of dollars on chain in represented as cryptocurrencies broadly, if we're not just talking about natively crypto assets and it's things that map to real estate or map to value driving businesses, right? Apple shares being actually represented on chain, things like that is very exciting from a composability and a total wealth generation perspective. It's definitely what gets us excited about this as like a 10-year business, 20-year business, is like, where is this world going to go? We have no clue, but we definitely want to be a part of it wherever it ends up going.
My last question for everybody on the show is about your vision for the company. Where would you like to see Bridgelet in 10 or even 20 years?
Yeah, so kind of phrase I used earlier was the idea of being an application agnostic protocol for liquidity for unique assets. And I think that is a mission and a vision that kind of is everlasting. It's what we're doing for the next year, and it's what we're doing for 5 years and for 10. So in the future and in 10 years, I see all like physical value, all unique assets being represented on chain, and where the infrastructure that allows for the seamless value transfer of those assets and really the financial system and the set of smart contracts that allow for all these financial products that kind of exist in the traditional financial market, like a mortgage-backed security, that enables all of those to exist on chain with the NFTs as physical assets.
Yeah, it's a wild idea. And I'm looking forward to fractionalizing some NFTs sometime soon. Well, thank you both so much for coming on the show. And yeah, really looking forward to seeing where Bridgelet goes.
Appreciate it, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.